8th Health and Wellness Lecture Series. Appreciate your coming today. As you may know, this is a monthly event, and within your packet of handouts and on the website, there's a listing of the presentations through, I think, November of this year. So please plan to attend future events. Also, we do record these, and so they are available on the web through an archive video. So if you miss one or you have friends who want to get more information about this one, please direct them to the website. We'd like to thank the UCSD School of Medicine and the Medical Center and also Community Advocates for Disability Rights and Education for their sponsorship of this event. And I'd like to just mention that I'm the director of the Accommodation Counseling and Consulting Services here at UCSD. And so if you have an issue where you might need a job accommodation or you know of someone who could use some help in adjusting to a medical condition, please ask them to give us a call. We'll be happy to help. Also, if you know of an access issue where someone's having trouble getting into a building or a facility or a program, if you could ask them to contact me, we'd like to make sure that people with disabilities have full access here at UCSD. It's my pleasure to introduce Vicki Newman. She's a registered dietitian with a Master's of Science degree, and she's also an associate clinical professor in the Department of Family and Preventive Medicine here at UCSD in the School of Medicine. Vicki is also the director of the Nutrition Services for the UCSD Cancer Prevention and Control Program, and she specialized in women's nutrition issues for more than 25 years. Today, Vicki will discuss her ongoing UCSD research focusing on how diet and making better choices in selecting foods can help to nourish the body, nurture the spirit, and are essential for health. These choices ultimately can help prevent and control diseases like cancer. And as I think most of you know, nutrition is always important, but it's especially important for people who've been diagnosed with cancer. In just a minute, I'm going to ask you to welcome Vicki, and I will mention that there will be time for questions. And I'll come around with a microphone when you have a question, if you could please speak into the microphone so we can record it so that people who are viewing it on the website can hear your question also. And now, please welcome Vicki Newman.
Thank you. And Gary, you're going to help me with that? Thank you so much for coming and for your interest in nutrition and diet and cancer prevention and control. I'm going to be focusing primarily on vegetables and fruits, whole grains and beans. Is that any surprise to anybody? And I hope through a series of slides in this discussion, Gary, you got to go back. Okay, I'll do it. To sort of embellish on that general theme that we've heard so much when we hear about how important diet is to the prevention of disease and just for making us feel better every day. We use the term go for the bold and talk a lot about big color and big flavor, and that's our general guide to choosing vegetables and fruits that are most plentiful in protective components, including vitamins and minerals. And you've heard this term phytochemicals or plant chemicals, so we'll be talking about that too. I'd like to start out with a bottom line because we read so much about diet and health, and sometimes it feels a little overwhelming, and sometimes we also get conflicting messages from the news media. But I think that it boils down to some very basic concepts which are on this slide, and I'll go into more detail and then probably come back to these. The first three, I'd like to credit Michael Pollan, who wrote the wonderful book Omnivore's Dilemma. How many people here have read that great book? It's wonderful, and he has a new one out. He wrote a great little article in the New York Times, and he said, if I had to just tell you three things to remember about diet and health, these are the first three. Eat food, and the way that I interpret that is eat food rather than food products. So if the closer we can be to food in its natural form, and even better locally grown, the better it is for our health and also for planetary health. Not too much means we have to kind of watch the portions because we obviously have a problem with creeping obesity happening in this country, and there's so much evidence that controlling our weight as we age is one really important way of protecting ourselves or reducing the risk for many of the common forms of cancer. And then the other one is mostly plants, and so when we think about looking at our plate, what we really want to see is a lot of vegetables, some fruits, whole grains and beans, and then the animal protein is sort of, we like to think of it more like a condiment. It sort of adds some high-quality protein, some taste, flavor, satisfaction. But it doesn't need to be, oh, I just got feedback there. Okay. It doesn't need to be half the plate. Now, I don't know what's causing that, but okay. And then I want to add the importance of drinking plenty of fluids. And I think since you're all interested in wellness, you know that. I see people more and more going around with their plastic bottles of water. In cancer prevention, we're a little bit worried about those plastic bottles, and you've probably read some of that. And if you are going to drink water out of plastic bottles, you are better off using the more rigid plastic. The softer, more pliable plastic has plasticizers and chemicals that can actually enter into the water and are considered cancer-causing chemicals. Not that a small exposure to those is a problem, but, you know, doing this over a lifetime may not be a great idea. And then the other thing that I find is that people are very conscious about water, and so they keep a lot of these little bottles in their cars, and they get hot, and the heat also helps more of those particles to migrate into the water. So I would like to ask you to think about using instead glass bottles that can be recycled, rewashed, and reused. So I'm just putting that out there for you to think about. Another basic concept is for us to eat slower. We're in this, you know, we're always looking for fast food. We want to gobble it down like while we're in the car on the way to work or sitting at our desk while we're eating. And one thing we try to do in the cancer prevention program is we really encourage people to leave their office at lunchtime, even if it's for 10 minutes or 15, sit outside, sit in some other place, and really be present with the food and appreciate it. Eating slower helps you to chew enough to actually break the food particles down so that you get maximal benefit out of the food. There's more surface area that's available to the digestive enzymes, and you get sort of the most benefit out of it. Exercise, this is a wellness conference series, so you know how important the two things go together. More and more research has been done on the importance of physical activity in cancer prevention, and I'll go into that in a little bit greater detail. But I like to link the two in the concept that keeping a healthy cardiovascular system is one way that we help to deliver nutrients out to our cells and then carry the waste products away. And so exercising regularly is important for health. It's also important, you can think of, for nutrient delivery and toxic waste disposal. And then I like to add practice gratitude, and that's really taking the time each day to think about all our blessings, you know, that we do have this incredible array of healthy foods available, along with an incredible plethora of foods that aren't so great for us. And so trying to stay more with the natural foods and then take the time to be grateful and thankful for our blessings is a great idea. You've seen the food pyramid that's put out by the USDA. I happen to like this one created by the University of Michigan better. And one of the reasons that I like it better is because the base of the pyramid is water. And that kind of underscores the importance of fluids every day. And, you know, we can live for days, for quite a long time without food, but not many days without water. And then right above that are vegetables and fruits. And so they're a real basic part of what brings in the protective nutrients that help keep us healthy. Above that is grains and then beans. And then all the rest of the stuff we need in much smaller amounts, actually, to be healthy. The American Institute for Cancer Research, how many of you know of this group, AICR? Okay, I've got the website here. They have just put out, every it's either every 5 or maybe it's every 10 years, they review all of the studies that have been published that link diet to cancer. And they put out a summary of that literature in a huge book about this thick. But what's really useful to most of us is a very nice summary that's available that you can download from their website that goes briefly through the bottom line of what they have found. And if you had to condense it down to some bullet points, because I like nutrition for dummies, you know, like the bottom line stuff, this time they actually put right up front the importance of avoiding overweight and obesity. So they're saying be lean as possible without becoming underweight. And then physical activity, it really came up above diet, which I thought was very interesting. And this 30 minutes a day of moderate activity, I mean, you could think of that as brisk walking. I've heard some people describe it as walking to Huffy Puffy. You know, it's not just sauntering, not just window shopping. It's, you know, walking with gusto. And then limiting energy-dense foods, especially sugary drinks. I mean, sometimes I don't think we even realize how many calories we get just by drinking them down. So then they got into the fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and beans, and limiting especially red meat and processed meat consumption. And then salty and prepared foods. And they also didn't find good evidence that supplements prevent cancer. And actually, in our research, we often find what they call a U-shaped curve, and that is inadequate amounts of nutrients, like vitamins, can put you at higher risk. The adequate, you know, sort of dietary amount or a little bit above that sort of is optimum. And then when you go overboard, you actually end up with more risk. So, you know, a good multiple is fine, and what you don't want to do is sort of go overboard. Now, we're talking about reduction of risk of cancer, but our research also includes reduction of risk of recurrence. And I wanted to just run you through a few slides. For those people that have been diagnosed and treated for cancer, of course, they want to prevent getting cancer again. And in this particular study, they were interested in dietary pattern and colon cancer. And you can see that they followed 1,000 people over a little bit over 5 years on average. They broke the group down to those that had what they called a prudent diet, which were the intake of fruits, vegetables, whole grains, beans, poultry, and fish was prominent, versus what they call Western-style eating. And in that case, they were looking at those that were eating more meat, more refined grains, higher fat, and more desserts. And it was interesting that in this study, they clearly showed that this Western-style diet that so many of us follow was significantly linked to higher rates of recurrence and death. So, I mean, it's just that's one study, but there have been many like this. Now, we just finished the Women's Healthy Eating and Living Study, but we're doing ongoing analysis of the data. That was the largest clinical trial in the country looking at the effect of diet on recurrence from breast cancer. We had nearly 3,100 women in the study, and they hung in there with us for sometimes as many as 11 years. The average follow-up was about 8 years. And we found and published, and you can find on our website, which is on all of your handouts, healthyeating.ucsd.edu. If you go to our research, you'll get a summary of what we have published so far in this and other studies we have done. But for one thing, one of the first ones that we published recently was looking at the women who came in at baseline. That was before they had intervention and changed their diet. And we found that women who came in eating 5 to 7 servings of vegetables and fruits per day, plus exercising the equivalent of 30 minutes at least 6 days a week, actually dropped their mortality rates by 50%. And it was interesting that we didn't see significance from either diet or exercise, but when you put the two together, there appeared to be some synergy. So that, I think, was a really important lesson that we learned. We also learned we ran all the intervention from UCSD over at the Cancer Prevention and Control Program. And we had 1,500, we'll say, and 50 women in the intervention. And these incredible women were so well motivated that even though many of them in the early questionnaires told us that they'd made remarkable diet changes since diagnosis, because what we found, to our surprise actually, is that they came in eating an average of almost 7 servings a day of fruits and vegetables. We're talking half cup servings. So that's a significant amount. With intervention, we use a telephone counseling program. They were able to get up to an average of about 12 servings a day. So we made this huge difference in the amount of fruits and vegetables that they were eating, which allowed us to test whether going, from what are the dietary guidelines essentially up to double that or almost double, didn't make a difference in recurrence rates. So, we were sort of hoping that it might, and there was some disappointing headlines where it said diet didn't matter. But the subtext of that, which often didn't get in the media, is it doesn't matter if you're at 7 servings, okay? Whole lots of people aren't there. So that was another thing we learned. And then the third, I think, important result published so far is that, again, looking at baseline data on the bloods that these women gave us so graciously many times over the period of follow-up, we found that those women with the highest serum carotenoid levels in their blood had lower recurrence rates. Now, we use carotenoids, which are the coloring compounds in foods, as an indication, what's called an objective measure of fruit and vegetable intake. So, people always sometimes dismiss diet results because they say, oh, people are just telling you what you want to hear. So we were very lucky to have the funding to be able to get this objective measure that actually was able to show that what the women told us they were eating in terms of fruits and vegetables appears to be reality, okay, because it tracked in the blood. So getting more fruits and vegetables seemed to still be a helpful thing, okay. It's thinking, and it doesn't want to go forward. What does that mean? Technical assistance, please. Okay, good. And of course, now it's going to do lots of interesting things. Okay. Well, hang in there. It says resume slideshow. Let's see if it listens to me. Yay. Okay. And then to underscore the physical activity data, this article was just recently published, and actually they devoted an entire issue of the Seminars in Oncology Nursing to the importance of physical activity in cancer prevention and control. And they found that they looked at 250 published studies on this topic and found convincing evidence that regular physical activity reduced significantly the risk of colon and breast cancer and probably also reduced the risk of endometrial cancer. And there was a possible, maybe probable, risk reduction for prostate and lung cancers. So I just want to underscore, along with diet, we've got to move. Okay? Now let's see if it goes forward. Yay. This slide is really just to remind me to emphasize to you all that the process of cancer is a continuum, and that, sometimes we get diagnosed with cancer and we think, oh my goodness, I didn't have it yesterday and suddenly I have it today. But the fact is that the cells in our body are constantly being, you could say, attacked. Chemicals, viruses, atmospheric radiation. And our body has this incredible redundant system that allows it to surveil these changed cells. It can sometimes actually mend or repair the DNA. If that doesn't happen before the next cell division, there's other ways that it will surveil, find these aberrant cells, and actually get rid of them. So part of where we think physical activity and exercise come in is helping to keep the immune system fully working at full capacity. Okay, there are always going to be times, I mean, these are not magic, you know, there are times when you have too much exposure all at once and things get out of control before your body can get in and fix it. But what we want to do is try to give our body all of what it needs to try to keep that immune system working as best it can. And one of the things that we have come to appreciate in the last number of years is the importance of phytochemicals or plant chemicals. And these are basically components that are produced by plants to protect them from their environment. So it's very interesting that when I first studied nutrition, and I see some dietitians here, so maybe they had the same experience, some of these components that we now think of as protective, we actually were taught to be cautious about many years ago, say 30 years ago. So let me give you an example of, let's just take a green leaf, you know, something like chard, which we know of as a very healthy food for us to eat. The plant will put a lot of carotenoids into that green leaf, carotenoids acting as antioxidants to actually protect that leaf from sun exposure or sunburn. We then eat the green leaf, take in those carotenoids, and those antioxidants then help protect our cells. So the other thing that's kind of interesting, and this sort of bridges on one of the reasons why we think organic is helpful, it's probably a good idea to have a plant somewhat exposed to little pests that eat it a little bit, because the plant will actually put out more of these phytochemicals. And, you know, we tend to spray pesticides on everything because we want perfect fruits and vegetables. And so we don't give that plant that opportunity to sort of, you could say, up its immune system, okay? Some of these phytochemicals are actually toxins, but they're toxins in such tiny amounts that they affect the pest negatively. When we ingest them, they actually upregulate or increase the activity of detoxification enzymes in our body. So giving ourselves a little exposure to these is also a good idea in terms of, again, keeping that immune surveillance and detoxification system working optimally. It's thinking. We need you to get a new one of these. This is going to slow down our lecture. And I'm not clear what the next slide is either. Oh, okay. So you've heard this guidance. It used to be 5 a day fruits and vegetables for better health. And the guidelines have been recently revised now to have a range of 5 to 9 fruits and vegetables every day. These are half cup servings. So I always think it's the amount of cut up carrots that could fit into the, you know, a cupped hand, all right? If it's leafy green like fresh spinach in a salad, then we think of it as like a fist. Okay, it's about this much. And you've always got your hands with you, so you can figure that out. And, you know, once you've used a measuring cup and kind of put that out on a plate, you know, you sort of can visualize it. So the 5 to 9 is based on body size and caloric intake. So smaller people need closer to 5. I'm looking at her. She probably needs 5, okay? So I'm 5'7.5". I probably need closer to 7 servings. Some of the guys that are bigger and have more mass would need closer to 9. So it really depends on your size, okay? But trying to get that number in is really important, at least 5 and up to 9 if you're a bigger person. Now, how are we doing? In California, if you took males and females over the age of 18 or 18 plus, we've got basically less than 1 in 3, okay, who's meeting even 5, okay? 3 other states do better than us, and all the other states in the United States do worse. So I think we have a ways to go here to be optimally healthy. Now, The other thing that's of concern to those of us working in cancer prevention is that the national data looks at all fruits and vegetables, and they count potatoes and iceberg lettuce and fruit juices as servings, okay? Iceberg lettuce really doesn't do much for you except crunch, okay? And potatoes are great if they're whole, you know, baked potatoes, boiled potatoes, but that's not the way we eat them in this country. You know, we eat them as fried potatoes, we eat them as tater tots, we eat them as, you know, those boxed flakes that most of the good stuff has gone from. So in our studies and intervention, we actually ask our participants not to even count potatoes, iceberg lettuce, or fruit juices. Now, let me say something about fruit juices, because a good, wonderful glass of fresh squeezed orange or grapefruit juice is wonderfully good for you, okay? But think about the way most of us get our fruit juices. If you look at the label, primary ingredients are often filtered apple or pear juice, which is pretty much sugar water, and then some, you know, other fruit added. So we would encourage people to eat the whole fruit, as much of, I mean, I'm not talking about orange skins, okay, but as much of the, and not banana peels, okay, but as much of the fruit as possible in order to get as many of the protective nutrients. The national data that actually looked at intake of colorful vegetables, the guidance being at least one a day of deeply orange or deeply green, found, look at this, less than 1 in 10 or 1 in 20 adults was actually getting that. So think back through your day today or yesterday and think, did I really have something that was deeply colored? And hopefully more than one serving would be even better. We don't say that everybody has to go for 9 servings a day, but I did want to tell you about this little study that was done at the Cancer Center in Denver. This was published a number of years ago, probably at this point, I don't know, time flies, we'll say 7 years ago. And they used adult volunteers, divided them into 2 groups. I think there were only maybe 40 in the whole study or less, so it was a small study. And they worked with the intervention group to encourage them, like we did in the well study, to eat more fruits and vegetables each day. They gave them cooking classes, recipes. And after 2 weeks, they actually got the intervention group. They wanted to get them to 12 servings a day like we did. They got them to 9. They took blood at the beginning and at the end of this time period. And then they started looking at the blood cells. They were particularly focused on white blood cells, which are part of the immune system. And they had those in Petri dishes. So they had the group that hadn't changed their diet and the group that had changed their diet only for a 2-week period. They added an oxidizing agent. I think of that like hydrogen peroxide, you know, when you pour that onto a wound and it fizzes. And interestingly enough, the group that had changed their diet only for 2 weeks, those white blood cells were significantly less likely to be degraded when they were confronted with an oxidizing agent. So what that tells us is that there was more protector in that cell, okay, that was able to help it withstand that assault. And while we can't really say that Petri dishes are completely analogous to what happens in a human body, I think one of the messages was that something measurable that was good, apparently good, happened in this body fluid, and it happened in only a 2-week period of time. And to me, that says that, you know, you should never think it's too late. I mean, even a little change, even if, like, we've just been through the holidays, this is January, you know, and people say, oh, my goodness, like, all the terrible things I did, it doesn't matter. I mean, start today, and, you know, in a few days, you'll be better than you were yesterday. So it's always, doesn't matter when you start or how long you do it. The more you do it, the sooner you start, the better. It's thinking. It would be nice, actually. I should pull out so I can see what's coming next. Okay. All right. So moving on to big color and big flavor, it may surprise you, it certainly surprised me when I started looking into this, that there are like 2,000 coloring pigments out there in the world. We hear of flavonoids, and by the way, they're featuring chocolate, okay? So along with red wine, you know. Now, we're not counting the sugar and fat in those brownies, but the flavonoids were really good for you. So the flavonoids are actually yellow coloring compounds. And so even something like a yellow onion, you know, when you peel it and you have that little bit of yellow, okay, those are flavonoids. They're found in things that seem colorless, even like apples. They're all through the fruit and vegetable and grain and bean foods. And then, and there's 800 of them, okay? Carotenoids are the orange and red coloring compounds, 450 of those, even though the one we hear about all the time is beta carotene, right? That's the one you see on food labels, in supplements. And then there's blue and purple coloring compounds, 150 of those. They're called anthocyanins. All of these act as antioxidants and are therefore protective, okay, in our body. So the more colorful, and think about what we've done to our food supply. Nature cleverly put color and flavor into foods to draw our attention to them. So what have we done in our wisdom? We've taken basic foodstuffs. Think about flour, you know, a grain. We've taken it and made it, we've refined away all the color down to white flour. We've taken sugar, refined it down, you know, so there's nothing basically but calories there. And then we've even taken our fats, you know, our soybeans, and gotten all the way down to colorless oil. So if you think about what's out there in the boxed and canned, especially the boxed arena and the frozen foods, and you look at your food labels, very often one of those three things is a first ingredient. And, you know, the actual food, the stuff that really has the protectors, is like a minimal amount. So we want to try to get food that still has these natural coloring compounds in it rather than go for foods that are made of white flour, white sugar, colorless oil that then have had coloring compounds added. Uh-huh. Green, the chlorophyll. Chlorophyll, actually, I'll talk about that in a second. So the first one that comes up, because it's thinking, the carotenoids, if you think of those are the orange and reddish colors, powerful antioxidants. I'll get to the greens in a second. One of their claims to fame, in addition to being antioxidants, is that some of them are changed by the body into retinol or vitamin A, which is critically important for immune functioning and also for the health of epithelial cells. And think about epithelial cells. There are skin, the genitourinary tract, the gastrointestinal tract, breast cells. So if we can keep healthy epithelial tissue, you know, that's one of the important things to do to maintain health. In our studies, we actually ask women and the men in our studies to look at the palms of their hands. And if the palms of your hands are slightly orange, what that's telling you in a very rough way, general way, is that your body has taken in enough carotenoids, you've made all the retinol that your body needs, and it's now storing it in the fat mass in the bottoms of your feet and in the palms of your hands. So once that storage capacity is maximized, it'll start taking those carotenoids out through your stool. Okay? So having plenty of these colorful things and having a little bit of an orange color is probably a good thing. It's thinking. The next one is leafy green vegetables. And they also have carotenoids in them. So there's orange coloring compounds in these leaves. They're actually masked by the green of the chlorophyll, okay, but they're there. An important carotenoid found in green leafy vegetables is lutein, which you've probably heard about because they started putting it in Centrum Silver because it helps protect the macula, okay, from macular degeneration. The dark green, one other thing, lutein cannot be changed into retinol or vitamin A, but it's a powerful antioxidant, so it is considered very protective. Green leaves, and really all fruits and vegetables, are also excellent sources of folic acid. And folic acid, it's so funny now, it's a fortification nutrient, right? They're putting it into white flour. Why are they putting it in? Because they took it out to begin with. It's incredibly important because the body uses that to repair damage to the DNA. And the other thing is that when you don't get enough folic acid, you actually get what are called sort of weak places in your cell walls, which allow viruses to get in and do damage. So there's lots of important reasons to actually get plenty of leafy green vegetables. Lycopene, you've heard a lot about because it has been considered protective against prostate cancer. Less evidence that it's protective against some of the other common ones like colon cancer and breast cancer. But a powerful, again, antioxidant, and it's the red coloring compound. If you cannot eat tomatoes, you can get this same compound in pink grapefruit, which is in season now, and watermelon. And it's interesting that it's one of the most prevalent ones circulating around in our bloodstream, and it is actually has been shown to be protective against sunburn in human skin. Not that we're saying, you know, if you're going to go out and get exposed, you shouldn't be using a sunscreen. But it's kind of interesting to me, and again, thinking about natural systems, when did a lot of these foods become available? Tomatoes and watermelon are summer fruits, so we would eat more of them at that time when we'd be out in the sun more. So, you know, we've gotten so far away from our natural systems with this kind of international food supply that we have. And even having, you know, melon at this time of year is kind of unusual. And yet that's often the fruit that seems to be ubiquitously available when you ask for a fruit cup at a restaurant. One thing that's important to remember about carotenoids is they are dispersed in the fat mass in the body. So if you have more fat mass, you need more carotenoids because it's going to be dissipated out in the fat mass. Okay, so if you're a bigger person, you need more of these colorful fruits and vegetables. Another thing to remember, and we learned this, I think, somewhat the hard way, back when we started the WELL study in 95, we, in cancer prevention, were very focused on low-fat diets being the primary important thing to remember in terms of reducing risk. And I think we maybe went a little too far because when you don't eat enough fat in a meal, you don't absorb carotenoids. And we actually saw that in the bloods of the women in the WELL study. We would have women that would be eating what appeared to be tremendous amounts of all the right stuff. We would take and look at their blood, and their blood levels of carotenoids weren't where we would predict they should have been. And then we would look at the fat that they were eating and find that they were actually following the current guidance down at 15% of calories from fat, which is basically no added fat. And forget avocados, forget nuts. Okay. So now the guidance is we're coming back to moderation, and we're saying get some fat with each meal so that you can absorb your carotenoids, but try to make the fat healthy fat. So healthy fat meaning fat that's found in a whole food, okay? Avocado, something like a lower fat cheese like a feta. If you're going to use fat out of a bottle, you know, olive is usually a good choice. And if you're going to do olive oil, go for the expensive olive oil that's deeply green and very fruity flavored, because then you'll use less because you get flavor, and also the green color tells you that more of the protectors are still left in, okay, in that product. And yet, what do? We go for the colorless one, okay? So, again, go for color. And then the blue coloring compounds, very strong antioxidants, known to have anti-inflammatory effect. And more we have come to realize that inflammatory conditions in the body seem to put people at greater risk for metastases. So we definitely want, for a lot of reasons, to be getting in these components that help protect against inflammation. Moving from color to flavor, again, I already told you about eating fruit rather than juice, but limonene is an important phytochemical that actually upregulates detoxification systems in the body. It's found particularly in the zest of citrus, but now we realize it also goes through the fruit. So I'm not saying to, you know, eat that skin because it's kind of bitter if you eat lots and lots of it. But at the University of Arizona Cancer Center, they do limonene research, and they make something called Mediterranean lemonade. Have any of you ever had that? What you do is you zest the entire lemon, okay, and put all of that, you know, into your pitcher, juice the lemon, add sweetener and water. So what you're getting is quite a pungent, you know, very distinct lemonade, giving you a lot more of these protectors, and it's actually very refreshing and delicious. In addition, we already know that citrus is a great source of vitamin C, which is important in immune functioning, and it acts as an antioxidant to protect the cells from damage, and very important to protecting against the combination of nitrites with amines in the stomach to produce nitrosamines. So, you know, when they say don't or be careful of the processed meats, you all know when you cook meat, it goes from pink to sort of brownish. So whenever you're eating meats that are still pink, you know, think about even turkey breast that they put in sandwiches. If it's still pink, they've probably added nitrites to it or nitrates to protect the color. And those can combine in the stomach with amines from protein foods to create nitrosamines, which are cancer-causing chemicals. Again, a little bit of that the body deals with. It's not a problem. But, you know, a lifetime of eating mostly processed meat is not a good thing in terms of cancer risk. If you're going to do that, think about, like, a BLT. So, you know, there was bacon, which has a lot of these compounds in it. But then they had it with a nice tomato, so you got some vitamin C. Or maybe you had bacon with your breakfast, but you'd have orange juice. So the vitamin C in the orange juice would be protective. So think about, you know, again, putting those protectors in. And then the flavonoids that are there are also considered protective, and they help to actually extend the amount of vitamin C activity in the fruit. Moving on, because I'm, running out of time already. Cruciferous vegetables you've heard about for a long time are protective in terms of cancer risk. And when we think of cruciferous, I think a lot of times we think cabbage and broccoli. But basically any of these vegetables that are listed here fall into that category. And the key component is that sulfur taste. So, you know, you think about how many of you do arugula now, like from the farmer's market. You know how you bite into and it's peppery? Okay. Or a good cabbage has that peppery taste, or rutabaga and turnips kind of give that sort of peppery. So that's the what we call the sulfur bite. And when you're cooking these foods, try not to cook them so much that the sulfur smell goes through your house. You know, think about corned beef and cabbage, the traditional. You know, you boil it all together, and what you smell is a lot of sulfur out there in your air, which means it's not going into your stomach and into your body. Okay, so undercooking is a good idea. These sulfur compounds actually upregulate the detoxification enzymes. So the more of them we get in our body, the better. We don't want them floating around in the air after cooking. And the allium vegetables, onions, garlic, leeks, etc., have some of those same sulfur compounds in them. So again, you don't have to really remember all of these different foods. What you have to do is sort of look at your plate and say, is there big color here? And how about big flavor? And is it naturally there? Okay. Aromatic herbs and spices are also protective. They have these, what gives them, you know, the flavor is actually these terpenoids that are that have these same, they're antioxidants and protectors. And it's a really good idea when you're buying herbs and spices to turn them over. You know, buy small amounts, if you can, in bulk. They're less expensive that way. And then, you know, if you haven't used them in 3 months, get a new supply. Because you want an oregano that you can really tell it's oregano. Whereas sometimes and even I've had this experience, you know, I'll open up something that I haven't used for a long time, like, say, savory or something that I don't seem to use frequently, and it smells sort of like straw, you know? And if it smells like that, forget it. You know, just pour it down the sink, not the sink, here, put it in your trash, and go get some new, because you really want it to have a pungent, you know, kind of a kick to it to get the maximum benefit. Some of you have probably been reading about curry foods, which turmeric is that kind of mustard-colored powder that's a common ingredient in curry. Some very interesting work being done showing it to be probably one of the spices that's protective against cancer risk. And I thought it was interesting that turmeric is in the same botanical family as ginger and lemongrass. And so, of course, I have friends that have been traveling to Thailand, and we have great Thai restaurants here, and many of the Asian cuisines use all three of those. So I think, how interesting. I also have colleagues that I eat with sometimes at the cancer center who are from India, and it's very common to use turmeric more than once a day. They cook rice almost always, I mean, let alone the curry, but their rice often has turmeric in it as well. It's thinking. Okay. Phenolic compounds also are found in fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and beans. They're also protective and act as antioxidants. And I bring these up just to kind of bring home the point. This was just 10 commonly consumed vegetables. They rated them by how much phenolic compounds they had in them. And the highest was broccoli, then spinach, onion, pepper, and carrot. So I'm reading big color, big flavor. Okay, and then you're working your way down, and what's the lowest? Cucumber and celery and lettuce, you know, colorless. So I thought that that clearly made the point. Then they looked at the effect of these foods on growth of cancer cells in petri dishes, and they found something similar. Big color, big flavor, more inhibition of cancer growth. I gave you in your handout a list of antioxidant-rich fruits and vegetables, so we won't go over those here, but again, I think if you look at these lists, you see color, you see flavor as an indication of antioxidant content. And how many of you eat kale regularly? Good, good. Dark green leafy, it's actually a better source of calcium than spinach because it doesn't contain the oxalic acid that spinach does. You know, when you eat spinach and it kind of makes your teeth feel chalky? So that's actually tying up calcium so you can't absorb it. We actually have, I brought along our cookbook too. We call it More Than a Cookbook. It has a lot of our favorite recipes in it and nutrition information. And we have a great kale, what I call kale for beginners. But anyway, I'll tell you about that if we have time. In addition, we talk about moderation and variety in when we talk about optimum diet. And this study was actually very interesting because it was fairly small, 100 women more or less. And they broke them down by how much botanical diversity. If you notice, they were eating 8 to 10 servings of fruits and vegetables a day, which is great. You know, they were like, wow. But what they found is that some of them were eating a lot of variety in those fruits and vegetables, and the other group was eating a lot less. And they found that the group with high biological diversity actually had significantly less DNA oxidation or damage compared to the group with less diversity. So, you know, it's always kind of nice when these basic things that we've been, like, in our gut knowing are right, they can prove, you know, through doing these nice studies. Now, the next thing people say is, so, you know, which kind of fruit or vegetable is best? And fresh and locally grown in season is always your best bet because you're going to get maximum nutritional content. But the other thing I think we're all worried about is ecological issues. So I'm making a huge effort lately, and more people are, to actually go to our farmers markets, and there's one here today, right? Talk to the farmers. One of the things we learned recently at a public forum, and this is something I hadn't thought about, is even if they can't say that they're organic, because for the smaller farms, it's very costly to get that kind of certification. If you actually go up and talk to them and you say, tell me how you control pests, you know. You can engage them in a conversation that will let you know how close to organic their produce is. And it's really wonderful how much longer it lasts also. And, you know, like really fresh broccoli is actually very sweet. When broccoli gets older, it gets kind of, you know, the sweetness goes away. So there's lots of benefits. But if you can't get fresh and locally grown, frozen works fine. It's a little less ecological. And canned, for certain things, works great. At Trader Joe's, they have this incredible organically grown pureed pumpkin, which is always a good thing to keep, you know, in your cupboard, because we add it, and there's a great recipe here for a turkey chili that we put canned pumpkin into. And you don't even sort of know the pumpkin's there, but it just kind of adds to the flavor and the texture, and you're getting all those extra carotenoids. I often put canned pumpkin into smoothies or add it to oatmeal in the morning, you know, if I find that my hands aren't orange enough, okay? So we, you know, we check. Okay, I just hit this, and I don't know. We'll see what happens. Okay, I also gave you a list of those fruits and vegetables that are more likely to have contaminants with environmental pesticides and things. So I'm not going to go into that except to say that for those, and this website, which you have in your handout, updates this information periodically, and you can go get lots more information on this website. It's really very helpful. And another publication, how many of you get Nutrition Action Newsletter? It's great. It's nutritionactionhealthletter.org or Center for Science and the Public Interest. It's like only $20 or $24 a year, and you get like 10 issues. And they are just so bottom line and helpful in terms of what they tell you about nutrition. So that's a great thing. They just did something on organic recently. Okay. We may have to close now. I have so much more to tell you, but let me just leave you with a thought. And this comes from Michael Pollan, who I just love. Sometimes the very best information you get on nutrition comes from non-nutrition people, because he actually teaches journalism, but he has this way of putting things in a very succinct way. So he says, and I love this, you are what you eat eats. So think about that. Think about what we're doing to cattle these days. They should be eating grass. We take them out of off the fields, and we throw them into pens, and we feed them corn, which makes them sick. And I also think about this in terms of plants. The plants that we eat the nutrients from the soil. And so the other thing that this conjures up in my mind is, remember the old love your mother and it was the earth? I think that, you know, the more we care about health, the more we have to care about the health of the planet, because ultimately that's the food and water that makes what we are. So I think it all goes together. And I have so many more slides, but I think I better stop now so that you can do your drawing and you can ask questions. And I also want to refer you quickly to our website, which is on your handouts. It's www.healthyeating.ucsd.edu. So you can find, I have a few of these if anybody's interested. They're $20 a piece, and all the proceeds go to the Cancer Prevention and Control Program. But if you're interested, you can also get more information on the book in your packet and on our website. We give lectures every month over at the Cancer Center. You can come again if you want to learn more, because I'll get through more of it. We have wonderful free cooking classes also in the Healing Foods Kitchen. So there's lots going on over there. And thank you so much for coming. Go ahead.
Thanks very much. Does anyone have just a couple questions before we end today?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But we know that there are devices now, for example, your fat to body ratio. Mm-hmm. We had it at our health thing recently where you grab it, hold it for a few moments, and it tells you what your body fat ratio is. And then recently I did one of these keratin type of
Right.
Devices where you hold on to this little thing and all of a sudden it says, well, you're in this range.
Right, and they're selling supplements.
Yeah. These are good because, you know, taking blood isn't necessarily available to everybody.
Right.
So I think these devices are really good. Who is doing research to clearly and honestly show us the relationships of these gadgets to actual blood work?
That's a good question. I know that the folks that are doing the carotenoid quick and dirty thing, because they're really trying to sell supplements, we were interested in collaborating with them, and they're really very focused on sales and not too interested in doing research. So that's a little bit of an issue that you're bringing up. But I agree that we need more quick and dirty ways of doing quick screening that kind of give people a general idea. And then if they turn out to be outside of sort of the optimum range, then they can go and have additional work done. So to answer your question, though, there is some work being done, not at our institution that I'm aware of, but it is sometimes difficult for in a for-profit to get them to want to wait to do the research and fund it. Okay? Any other questions? You had one back there. Uh-huh.
Thank you. I had a family member who recently had her stomach removed and her spleen and some lymph nodes due to stomach cancer.
Uh-huh.
And I was just wondering what recommendations you would have for her going forward, the do's and don'ts, and what may be beneficial for Dean, what she can eat, and how to eat.
Okay. So he's asking a very specific question that borders on therapy, and for that he needs to, your friend or family member needs to go for medical nutrition therapy. And that means to actually meet face-to-face with a dietitian. And the way that they do that is talk to their oncologist or their care provider and get a referral to the clinical nutrition services. Because that's a hugely complicated question that you just asked, and somebody needs to sit down and work with that person. Okay? Yeah. Anything else? Okay. Uh-huh.
I have a question regarding the bold colors, because sometimes it can get confusing. I noticed on your list cucumbers.
They're
at the bottom of the list, and yet the skin on those is very dark. So it kind of fools you. And so some things, it's lighter inside, darker outside, and some of the examples you've given are that variety as well.
Right.
That are good or bad. So you really have to educate yourself. It can be...
Yeah, and I think, we're talking quick and dirty, and we're talking, usually we say colorful all the way through. So when we talk about something like squash, for example, zucchini is plentiful so much of the year. So the green part, the outside, is high in lutein, but then the inner part, which is a significant part of the vegetable, isn't. So if I were to choose a squash to get most benefit, I would go for winter squashes and sort of not pay much attention to zucchini, okay? So, again, variety is good, but, you know, if you're limited to 5, go for colorful all the way through, okay? Is that it? Because he needs to do the drawing.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to do the drawing real quickly.